to practice it. An idea always sounds better when it hasn't been challenged. But an unchallenged idea is rarely able to live in the real world. That's why you need to take it for a walk and see what happens. 8. Question the thought. Expand your thinking. Earlier, I explained that we need to evaluate our thoughts by asking ourselves if they still speak to us after 24 hours have passed. But it's important at this stage for us to question our thinking again. After practicing a thought, ask yourself, what did I learn from practicing it? To judge whether the idea is still viable. We should never be so in love with a thought that we don't question it. The process of questioning expands your thinking, your capacity, and your potential. You'll discover a few things you should do, and a half dozen or more things you shouldn't. And you'll be better for having gone through the painful process. 9. Embrace the thought. Own your thinking. Something powerful happens when a person moves from believing in an idea to owning an idea. Believing in an idea can be good, but it's very limiting. When you believe in an idea, it's like investing in an endeavor with someone else's money. You give it a try, and you hope it works. However, when you own an idea, it's like putting your own money into an investment. You do what it takes to make it work. The greater the investment, the more you feel that it has to work. 10. Launch the thought. Implement your thinking. When you launch an idea, you need to be clear about what you want people to know and what you want people to do. The launch is the greatest test of any idea. The implementation demonstrates an idea's real value or lack of value. When it works, it's powerful because everyone sees it. 11. Land the thought. Make your thinking work. Launching an idea is very rewarding, but the results come with the landing. It's similar to the way gymnastics are scored. At a meet, the tumbling passes and the aerial vaults of the best gymnasts always get lots of oohs and ahs from the audience. But their twists and turns in the air don't bring high scores unless the athletes stick their landings. The landing always matters. 12. Upgrade the thought. Mature your thinking. When a thought lands and makes a positive difference, the temptation is to celebrate and move on. I'm all for celebrating. Wins can be hard to come by, and when we do experience a win, we should thank the people who helped make it happen and give them the credit they deserve. But if we do that without looking for a way to upgrade the thought, we miss a great opportunity. Growth requires your thoughts to be continually upgraded. If you want to increase your potential, maximize your capacity, and be successful, develop your thinking. High thinking capacity and the ability to sustain your thinking will give you a higher return than being smart or working hard. The difference between average thinkers and good thinkers is like the difference between ice cubes and icebergs. Ice cubes are small and short-lived. Icebergs are huge, and there is much more to them than meets the eye. Their potential is enormous. Thinking potential questions. 1. Do you have a system for capturing your ideas? If so, how well is it working for you? If not, what could you do to begin recording your ideas so you don't lose them? 2. Who are the people you bring to the table to improve your ideas? How much are they helping you? What can you change to get them to help you more? 3. Do you have a greater bias toward action or toward thinking? What would happen if you were able to harness both? Chapter 4. People potential. Your ability to build relationships. In 2004, I wrote a book called Winning with People, out of the conviction that people can usually trace their successes and failures to the relationships in their lives. We are defined by our relationships. Maybe up until now your relationships haven't been as positive, rewarding, and productive as you'd like them to be. That's okay, because you can learn how to build better relationships and increase your relational potential. I've spent some time thinking about the things I've done that have enabled me to establish and enjoy long-term relationships. And these 7 steps can help you to develop stronger relationships with others. 1. Care about people every day. You cannot increase your people capacity unless you value people and care about them. If you don't like people, don't respect them, and don't believe they have value, it stands as a barrier to your success with them. You can't secretly look down on others and build them up at the same time. However, if you truly care about people, it shows, and it makes the development of positive relationships possible. 2. Make yourself more valuable in your relationships. What's the fastest way to make a relationship better? Make yourself better so that you have more to give. That requires an abundance mindset. That's the belief that there's more than enough for everyone, and people always have the potential to find or create more. Try improving yourself and your situation with the purpose of giving to others and see what happens. As you give, I guarantee that your ability to give more will increase. It will motivate you to give of your thoughts, time, assets, relationships, influence, and giftedness. I ask a lot of questions to discover how I can better add value to others. There is no better way to show people you value them than by asking for their opinion. Communicating is about adding value to people, not adding value to yourself. The more you know about people, and the more you improve yourself, the more you can make a difference in the lives of others. You can give more value to others, and that increases your relational capacity. 3. Put yourself in their world. Are you familiar with the saying, "It's lonely at the top"? I don't like it. It's a sign of disconnection. I tell leaders that if they're lonely at the top, it means no one is following them. They need to get off their mountain or out of their ivory tower, go to where their people are, and spend time with them. People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Make yourself available to the people in your life, and be alert to ways you can go to them when they need it. Sometimes you don't even need to say a word. Just be there. Just let others know what they mean to you. 4. Focus your relationships on benefiting others, not yourself. To build great relationships, you need to want more for people than you want from people. The people who want more for others and give more than they take are pluses. The ones who want and take more than they give are minuses. That's simple relational math. I determined that I wanted to be a plus with people. With those closest to me, I want to be a plus plus. My desire is to make 5 relational deposits for every relational withdrawal I make from the relationship. I don't always succeed, but it is my goal. I never want to take any relationship for granted. I never want to assume that a relationship gives me privileges that are not mine. Assumption is a killer in relationships. It needs to be replaced with awareness. If you want to increase your relational capacity, you should be continually aware that relationships never stay the same. They never stay alive on their own. They need cultivation. And you have to keep being intentional about adding value to continue being a plus in another person's life. 5. Be a consistent friend in your relationships. I believe the ability to be a good friend is something that is often undervalued and overlooked today. Good relationships are built upon consistency. Relationships that are volatile and continually up and down are not easy. They provide no relational rest. There is nothing pleasant about being in relationships that are continually high maintenance. You can't be good friends with people when someone has to walk on eggshells, or when any conversation could lead to the end of the relationship. We must be dependable and consistent. We must be trustworthy. Our friends must know that they can depend on us. How? These tips have helped me over the years. Believe the best about people. Try to see people as they could be, not necessarily as they are. When you believe the best of people, you don't feel the need to correct them or try to fix them. Believing the best of others is always the right thing to do, even if it means you may not always be right. People are more apt to change when another person believes in them than when people don't believe in them. Don't allow other people's behavior to control you. Too often, people allow the actions of others to impact their own attitudes and emotions. They let others' inconsistency make them inconsistent. But you need to understand that when that happens, you've allowed it. As humans, we have the capacity to create and control our own attitudes and emotions. We need to make that choice for ourselves every day. Otherwise, people will control us. Place high value on relationships, even in difficult situations. Dealing with people is sometimes difficult. As a leader, I have occasionally had to fire an individual. Letting someone go may be the right thing to do for the organization, but we should also make sure to do the right thing for the person relationally. If possible, I seek to continue the relationship. Sometimes the person doesn't want that. That's okay. I cannot determine what they are going to do. I can only determine what I am going to do. And what I will do is remain a friend to them. Unconditionally love people. Unconditional love is the greatest gift we can give another person. It allows someone to feel secure, be vulnerable, sense their worth, and discover who they really are. I believe that all people long to have a consistent friend who loves them, believes in them, and is continually there for them, no matter the circumstances. If you're willing to be that kind of person for others, not only will it expand your people capacity, it will also give you a more satisfying life. You may be thinking, I can't do this with everyone because some people are just difficult. That's true for all of us. In the end, our goal should be to treat others better than they treat us, to add value to them in a greater capacity than maybe they expect. 6. Create great memories for people. It has been my observation that most people do not maximize the experience they have in life. To do so, two things are essential: intentionality on the front end of the experience and reflection on the back end. So anytime you can help people do those things, the experience becomes special for them, and it often creates a positive memory for them. Most of us have traditions and memories associated with special days, but I want to challenge you to make memories out of everyday experiences. Every time you are with people, ask yourself these questions. What can I say that will affirm those with me? What question can I ask that they will find interesting to discuss? What can we do that will be different and fun? What do I know that they would want to know? Do I have a secret of my own that I can tell them? All of these can lead to great memories. Many little things done repeatedly with high intention are better than big things done only occasionally. You can make big or small moments special for others, but you have to be intentional about it. 7. Move toward the relationships you desire in your life. Put yourself in a position to meet and spend time with the right people. I always want to spend time with people who know more than I do. And whenever I'm with someone I respect and have gotten to know, I ask them, "Who do you know that I should know?" That question has given me a greater return in life than any other. The greatest way to know whom you should know is to ask someone who knows you. I want to encourage you to be intentional and show initiative by moving toward the relationships you desire in life. If you wait for the right people to meet you, you won't meet the right people. I don't wait for all the stars to align before I take action, and neither should you. Find one star and start moving toward it. Whom do you know who knows someone you should know? You may be only one person away from the next big thing that you need in your life. You may be thinking, "I'm not a people person." If that's true, ask people with strong relational skills to help you. Let them compliment and complete you. You can draw people to you by saying to them, "I need you." The more you value people, put yourself into their world, seek to add value to them, and be their friend, the better your life will be. Not only that, but doing these things will increase your people capacity, improve your potential, and improve your life. Just remember, helping people is always worth the effort. People potential questions. 1. When you interact with people, where is your focus? Are you usually thinking about how you can help them or how they can help you? What must you do to make benefiting others the focus of your relationships? 2. Which of the people in your life would describe you as a consistent friend? Which would not? What must you change to become a consistently positive friend to everyone? 3. What relationship do you desire to move toward to improve your life and capacity? What is the first step you must take to facilitate the connection? Chapter 5. Creative Potential. Your ability to see options and find answers. Is it true that some people are born highly creative? Of course. There are the rare few who breathe to create and are gifted with the ability to change the world in that regard. In fact, some argue that all of us are born creative, but most of us lose that creativity as we grow up. But you can rekindle the creativity that's already in you, plus cultivate new pathways of creativity. I want to walk you through the 8 keys to increasing creative potential that I've used to go from bottom of the class to top of my game. Embrace each of them, and you will immediately see an increase in your ability to see options, solve problems, and find answers. 1. Believe there is always an answer. Why are creative people willing to give time, patience, and experimentation to unsolvable problems? Because creativity always takes time, patience, and experimentation. You just have to enter into the process believing there is an answer. Creativity is a mindset. You have to believe that answers and solutions are out there if you're willing to keep fighting to find them. Each door you open leads to another door. One of those doors will eventually lead to an answer. 2. Believe there is more than one answer. My favorite word is options. However, that has not always been true. In my younger years, I was always quick to give people what I thought was the answer to any question they asked. I was confident, opinionated, and certain about everything. Today, I think broadly and search for as many possible answers as I can find. Only when I develop a long list of options do I line them up and ask, "What is the best option?" I take great comfort in finding several effective ways to get things accomplished, and seek to discover as many options as possible. If you're a leader, you may want to adopt a practice that I've used with my staff. Whenever people on my team come to me with a problem, I ask them to prepare at least 3 solutions to that problem. I do that to help them to become more creative, more open-minded, and more willing to consider different ideas and opinions. If they can become flexible and demonstrate the ability to adapt to fluctuating situations, they will be more effective and productive. I know from my own experience that I became more creative when I began to believe there was always an answer. That creativity multiplied dramatically when I discovered that there are many answers. 3. Believe that everything and everyone can get better. Creative people, whether they are artists, inventors, business people, or teachers, believe there are always better ways to do things, and they search for them. When you believe that everyone and everything can get better, it gives you confidence that you can help people and make a difference, and it inspires you to keep looking for ways to solve problems and pursue opportunities. 4. Understand that questions help you to be more creative. Questions always spur creativity. Why? Because questions cause you to explore, to seek out. The phrase, "what if," is one of my favorites, because it's the start of a question that will lead to sometimes breathtakingly creative answers. Here are some questions to ask yourself to help you to become more creative. How can I make things better? If you're already successful, this is a fantastic question to ask. Anytime we're successful, there is a temptation to be lulled into a feeling of false security, to believe that we have arrived. But the greatest detriment to continual success is relying on past success. What can I do to become better? I am obsessed with becoming better every day. I don't spend time thinking about any honors I've been given in the past. I'm grateful, but I also recognize that awards are given for what we've done yesterday. The question I ask myself is, what am I doing today? Are the right people at the table? The people around you make all the difference when it comes to creativity. You need people who are willing to prepare, as well as to dream. And you need people who are willing to be as tenacious as you are in searching for answers. How can I connect things with creativity? As Steve Jobs said, creativity is just connecting things. When you ask creative people how they did something, they feel a little guilty because they didn't really do it. They just saw something. It seemed obvious to them after a while. If you want to increase your creativity, begin looking for connections. 5. Be comfortable with half-baked ideas. When I was young, I held on to ideas way too long before I shared them with others. Why? I wanted them to be presentable. I didn't want to fail. I didn't want my ideas to be rejected, and I wanted credit. Back then, looking good was more important to me than getting good. Today, I'm in love with half-baked ideas, and am willing to ask for them as well as share them with others. Why? Because when we do, we gain at least these 3 benefits. We increase our odds of being successful. If you want to accomplish many things, you have to try many things, even if you feel they're not quite ready. Dan Ariely, Duke University professor and author of Irrationally Yours, on missing socks, pickup lines, and other existential puzzles, says that if you try 30 new things this year, you might find that you rack up 15 good experiences. But if you wait to try things only when you're sure of success, you might experience only 3 good things. We gain more practice with creative ideas. Keeping our imaginations sharp is essential to creative thinking and problem solving. That requires practice. Unfortunately, as we get older, most people practice creative thinking less and less. We stop using our imaginations. Working with half-baked ideas forces us to use our imaginations and practice creative thinking. We become more comfortable with our misses. If you throw a lot of ideas at the wall, some will stick and others won't, and that's good. You can't succeed if you don't try. And once you realize you're no worse off for having tried and failed, it gives you confidence to keep trying. Creative people fail, and the best fail often. They're like children who try an idea before it's formed, and if it doesn't work, they move on to the next idea. And they keep moving on until they find one that works. If you want to be more creative, get used to missing the mark. 6. Be comfortable letting go of what you embraced yesterday. When was the last time you said goodbye to something that you worked hard on but no longer works today? In the beginning, it wasn't quick or easy for me to let go of things. But over time, I've been able to move on and let go because I've learned some lessons. It's easier to let go of something if you're going to get something better. You don't let go just for the sake of letting go. You let go only because tomorrow looks better than yesterday. People usually cut their losses too late. My brother Larry, who was a fine businessman, taught me many years ago about cutting losses. He would say, "John, try to let your first loss be your last loss." I haven't always done that well, but I have gotten a lot better. Excellence is possible only with creative dissatisfaction. If we are satisfied, we don't try to get better. At the other extreme, if we embrace dissatisfaction without a desire for excellence, we just become miserable or depressed. However, when you couple dissatisfaction with the desire for improvement, you become innovative. You can't fall in love with structure. When your security is structure, rules, and regulations, you stop being creative. You can't love both staying in the box and creativity. Are you willing to let go of some things you love? If not, you're going to have a hard time being creative and becoming any better than you are today. 7. Ask creative people to help you. When you ask creative people to help you, your goal isn't just to have people come together for a creative think session. Your goal is to have the right people in the meeting. What are the qualities of the right people? Here's what I look for. Fluency. The ability to generate a number of ideas so that there is an abundance of possible solutions. Flexibility. The ability to produce many different kinds of ideas in various categories for any given problem. Elaboration. The ability to add to, embellish, or build from an idea. Originality. The ability to create fresh, unique, unusual, or different ideas. Complexity. The ability to drill down and conceptualize difficult, intricate, or multifaceted ideas. Boldness. The willingness to be daring, try new things, and take risks. Imagination. The ability to invent, see, and conceptualize ingenious new ideas. Security. The willingness to appreciate others' ideas and not protect their own. Values. The ability to think and create in accordance with my values and priorities. These are the people who can help you create. Leave out analysts, critics, editors, educators, and implementers. Otherwise, the group's creative wings will be clipped before you are ever given any room to fly. 8. Give yourself creative retreats. Solitude is the other side of the coin in creativity. While I love bringing together a group of creative people to brainstorm, I also love spending time by myself, thinking. We need inspiration from within, as well as from without. Creativity flourishes in solitude. There is a relationship between scheduling a time to be creative and being inspired to create. That's why I try to schedule time every day as well as plan extended times weekly, monthly, and yearly. You will become as creative as the amount of time you set aside for it. If you're like me, you need time alone to think and create for yourself and others. Setting aside that creative time of retreat can give you the greatest ROI, return on investment, in your life. If you desire to increase your creativity capacity, you can do it. You can train yourself to see possibilities. You can learn to find answers. You can become someone who always offers options. And you can work with others to become inventive and innovative. If you can pair that with productivity, which is the subject of the next chapter, you'll really be able to increase your capacity. Creative potential questions. 1. When it comes to problems, challenges, and obstacles, do you believe there is always a solution? Explain your answer. 2. Do you find it difficult or easy to let go of old successes and solutions? Why? How could you leverage a stronger faith in the future in order to let go of the past? 3. Are you better at pulling together a group of creative people to get ideas or at retreating into solitude to think? What could you do to improve in the area where you currently don't do as well? Chapter 6. Production potential. Your ability to accomplish results. Of the 7 areas of potential I'm challenging you to develop in this section, production potential can be increased the most if you are highly intentional about it, regardless of your level of giftedness. If you're willing to work at it, you can be successful. The world tries to talk us out of working hard. We convince ourselves that we can't get ahead. I want to begin by telling you the truth. Everything worthwhile in life, everything you want, everything you desire to achieve, everything you want to receive, is uphill. The problem is that most of us have uphill dreams, but downhill habits. Downhill is easy. It has no requirements. It doesn't take any effort. It's like feeling the effect of gravity, which continually pulls us down. You can slide downhill in your sleep. A downhill lifestyle is characterized by unintentionality, complacency, inconsistency, and excuses. There is no big picture vision for the future, only instant gratification. Uphill is hard. Moving uphill requires intentionality, energy, determination, hard work, and consistency. It requires you to keep an eye on the big picture, be determined, demonstrate character, and put in the time. The right thing to do and the hard thing to do are usually the same thing. I want to challenge you to become an uphill climber. Perhaps you find that intimidating. Maybe you've not done as well in the past as you'd like to, and you find it difficult to move forward in this area. If so, let me ask you this. If you won't do it for yourself, will you do it for your family and friends? The life you choose for yourself doesn't begin and end with you. What you do influences others. If you feel like your life is going downhill instead of uphill toward the accomplishment and rewards you desire, you need to change the way you approach productivity. First, you need to own your past and current level of productivity, whatever it is. Next, you need to learn to embrace uphill practices and habits that will help you to increase your capacity. I want to help you with productivity. and I'm going to try to do that by acquainting you with a friend of mine named Paul Martinelli. The Uphill Climb. Paul grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You know how some people say, "We grew up poor, but we never knew it." Paul says, "We grew up poor, and we knew we were poor. We felt it every day." Nobody gave Paul much of a chance because he had a speech impediment. Back in those days, the school system treated him like he was disabled. His friends made fun of him and called him stupid. Paul dealt with that by working, delivering papers, collecting bottles, selling light bulbs door to door, raking leaves in the fall, and shoveling driveways in the winter. He did whatever he could do to make an honest buck to help his family. By the time he was 15, Paul was pretty discouraged with school and decided he'd rather just work. So he dropped out and started work on a roofing crew. But he also joined the Guardian Angels, a group of citizen volunteers who patrolled the streets to discourage crime. It took no time at all for Paul to rise up. He quickly recruited 100 young people into his chapter. He was so good at recruiting and fundraising that he soon became the number 2 man in the organization and traveled the country with founder Curtis Sliwa. Paul enjoyed his role with the Guardian Angels, but after 7 years, the entrepreneurial bug bit him again, and at age 22, he decided he wanted to start his own cleaning business. For 16 years, through many ups and downs, Paul led his company, At Your Service, and grew it into a highly profitable business. While he was learning and growing, Paul decided that he wanted to help others become more successful in their careers. So he started to teach them from a book that had changed his life, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. He found it so rewarding that he located an organization to train and certify him as a speaker. Within months, he became the most successful entrepreneur in that network of speakers, while still running his cleaning business. The organization's founder discovered this and wanted to hire Paul to run his conference business. So Paul sold At Your Service and changed careers. By then, he had 100 full-time employees cleaning 150 locations every night, including offices, restaurants, country clubs, movie theaters, imaging centers, hospitals, and even a zoo. 5 years later, he approached me along with mutual friend Scott Fay and said, "John, let's start a world-class coaching company." It was something I'd never considered before. And to be honest, I wasn't sure I wanted to do it. But Paul was very persuasive, and we decided to partner together. I would give the program my name and teach the coaches my values, and Paul would do all the other work. In just 6 years, Paul did wonders. He took the John Maxwell team from 0 coaches to more than 15,000 coaches. He grew it from his headquarters in South Florida and spread it to 145 countries around the world. As the president of the John Maxwell team, every day he climbs uphill and leads thousands of certified coaches to climb with him. I've met few people in my life with his ability to produce. I find Paul's story remarkable. It illustrates the power of perseverance and productivity. Paul found a way, and I want to share that way with you. Paul's principles can be applied to anything you want to make happen. Whether it's a business, a nonprofit organization, a home remodel, a sports team, you name it. If you want to increase your production capacity, take the following ideas to heart. 1. Visualize the perfect outcome. Do you have a vision for what you want to accomplish? Have you created a mental model of perfection for what you desire to achieve? If not, you need to work on that. It's your starting point. Put as much detail into it as you can. Will it actually be perfect? No. But that idea is where you need to start. 2. Start working before you know how to achieve the vision. When you want to accomplish something, you have to have a vision for what you're trying to do. But you also have to be willing to take action in the face of uncertainty. You need to tap into your thinking capacity to know what you're shooting for. But you also need to have a bias for action to be productive. You have to be willing to take a step, probably a small step. Most people want to start with one bold, certain leap. They want a big head start, a quantum leap. But Paul points out that there are very few quantum leaps. If we're willing to take one small step, 10 small steps, 100 small steps, then we may have a chance to make a leap later. It may look like an overnight success to others, but we know it's the result of many small successes. And you don't achieve those unless you're willing to take that first uncertain step. 3. Fail fast, fail first, and fail often. This step seems to fly in the face of the idea of striving for perfection. But to be productive, you have to be willing to fail. A lot. A key is to avoid thinking of your efforts as right or wrong, as successes or failures. Instead, ask yourself if what you did got you closer to your vision of perfection. If it did, it's a win. If it didn't, then look at what didn't work. Make adjustments, and try again immediately. Are you willing to fail? Are you willing to fail repeatedly? Are you willing to learn from what didn't work? That's what will be required for you to blow the cap off your production potential. 4. Stay focused longer than other people do. Paul learned a lot of lessons as a budding entrepreneur during his childhood. As I look back, says Paul, I realize that I stayed focused longer than most people. When all the other kids would go out to shovel snow, most kids would do it for 30 minutes and maybe earn $3 or $4. Then they would quit. I had the ability to stay focused, regardless of the distractions, to the exclusion of outside conditions or circumstances. That was what was giving me the results. That still gives Paul results. It will give you results too. Paul started out working hard because people told him he wasn't smart. Now he recognizes how smart he is, but his work ethic is still intact. So I have to ask, how long do you stick with something to make it work? And how hard do you work at it while you're doing it? Do you stay focused? Here's the thing you need to learn from Paul's example. He initiates many tries at one thing, not one try at many things. That's an approach anyone can adopt, regardless of talent, intelligence, resources, or opportunity. 5. Take inventory of your skills and resources. About 2 years into his cleaning business, Paul hit a wall. I was doing what I'd been told my whole life, says Paul. I was told that if I worked hard and did honest work, that things would be okay. I was working hard. I was doing honest work. But things weren't okay. I would get a new account. Then I would lose two others. I would get an employee well trained, and then he would leave to earn 25 or 50 cents an hour more somewhere else. It was the proverbial one step forward, two steps back, and I didn't know how to change it. I was stuck. And let me tell you, stuck stinks. Back then, Paul didn't know how to navigate himself out of his problem. So he started to think about himself and his skills. He realized that he needed to grow. If you are not growing, Paul says, you are not living at your full capacity. If you want to be more productive, you need to take charge of your own productivity. 6. Stop doing what you're not great at doing. You will drastically increase your production capacity if you stop doing what you're not great at, and instead focus on what you do best. Find ways to focus your time and attention and work toward eliminating from your schedule anything that doesn't have a high return. 7. Tune in to your team every day. Because Paul recognizes the importance of the team, he is highly intentional in staying connected to his people. Every day he calls somebody to check in with them, or drops into their office just to chat. He pays attention to his team's social media. He wants to know how they're doing. "You've got to know the vibe of the tribe," says Paul. I do this as well. I try to have dinner with key members of my staff, and I take them with me to events so that we can spend time together. I know that those closest to me determine my level of success, so I want to maintain and develop those relationships and add value to my team members whenever I can. If you want to be productive, you need to develop a team, connect with team members, and keep adding value to them. 8. Make decisions every day to move yourself and the team forward. When Paul starts any endeavor, his first goal is to just get started and make things functional. For example, when he started the John Maxwell team, he didn't even have a website. But he didn't let that stop him. He did the things he knew how to do, and then worked to make improvements. And that's where he focuses a lot of his production energy. That process requires the ability to make decisions every day. One of the things I find most interesting about Paul is that he doesn't see decisions as right or wrong, good or bad. He judges only whether or not they move him and the team forward or backward in the journey toward his vision. You will only reach your production capacity if you are willing to make decisions. And Paul's approach to decision-making can free you up. When it comes to character and ethical decisions, yes, there is right and wrong. But when it comes to productivity and achievement, there isn't. Either something works or it doesn't. Either it takes you forward or it doesn't. If you develop the habit of making quick decisions, try new things, and judge whether or not they take you forward, you will be more productive. 9. Continually reevaluate what could work better. Productive people are always working to become better and to find better ways of doing things. The place where today and tomorrow meet is where you can create positive change. The only time you really control is now. You can't change yesterday. You can't control tomorrow. But you can choose what you do today with the goal that those choices will make things better tomorrow. Few things will positively impact your potential or your success more quickly and thoroughly than increasing your production potential. If you take a cue from Paul, you can do that immediately. Adopt his practices. Repeat them daily until they become habits, and watch what happens. Production potential questions. 1. Is your natural inclination to be a historian who examines the past, a reporter who observes and comments on the present, or a futurist who acts today with the intention of improving tomorrow? What could you do to focus more on the emerging future? 2. Using Paul's story as inspiration, how would you describe your vision of a perfect future? What would you be doing? Describe it in as much detail as possible. 3. What downhill habits do you currently possess that are taking you away from that ideal future? What uphill habits must you cultivate to replace the unproductive ones? Chapter 7. Leadership potential. Your ability to lift and lead others. If you've read some of my other books on leadership, you may be wondering what I plan to teach in this chapter. I'm going to teach you from the new things I am learning now. Some of what I'm going to share are new thoughts layered on older thoughts. Some are old thoughts that have spurred new thoughts. I hope all of them increase your capacity, as they have increased mine. 1. Ask questions and listen to understand and find your people. Communication is the language of leadership. For years, I held on to the illusion that as long as I was talking and giving direction, communication was happening. I was focused on vision. I thought leadership was about me and what I wanted. Today, I want my people to know me, and I want to know them. Questions open up doors and allow us to connect with others. They place value on the other person, and they give us a different perspective. Before we attempt to set things right as leaders, we need to see things right. The highest compliment you can give people is to ask them their opinion. However, none of that works if you don't listen. Questions start the conversation, but listening encourages it to continue. Listening shows that I want to understand someone before I try to be understood by them. Questions plus listening equals quality conversation. Quality conversation equals quality leadership. 2. Connect with people before asking them to change. By its nature, leadership is about creating change. As a leader, you are inviting people to change their focus, change their energy, change their skills, and sometimes even change their direction in life for the sake of the team and the accomplishment of the vision. How do you get people to trust you for so many changes? Trust needs to be built on good relationships, and good relationships start with good connections. If you're a task-oriented person, connecting may be something you have to work at to achieve. If you're a people person, building the relationships may come naturally, but making the transition from relationship building to movement requires what I call a leader shift. That shift is the transition from connecting with people to helping them make the changes necessary for the benefit of the team. One of the keys to helping team members make successful changes is to set expectations for them up front. It increases the odds of positive change later in the relationship. I want to walk you through the 6 steps I use to set expectations. I believe they will set you up for success as you connect with people and then invite them to change. Let them know you value them. The greatest gift leaders give team members is their belief in them, letting them know that they are valued. If I, as your leader, don't value you, I will try to manipulate you for my advantage instead of investing in you for your advantage. So in setting expectations for people, I clearly communicate how much I value them as individual people, not just as team members. And that means I care enough for them to confront them. I value them too much to allow them to remain the same. Once they know that my expectations for them are birthed out of how much I value them, the environment has been set for the next step. Identify the value they place on themselves. Self-worth is foundational to belief. The moment that your belief in yourself goes up, so can your commitment to help yourself. If the people on your team don't believe in themselves, as the leader, you need to try to help them find that belief. You need to encourage them. You need to speak positive words of affirmation. You need to teach them. And you need to help them put wins under their belts. Does that always work? No. But if their self-worth never rises, neither will their performance. Tell them growth is expected. As a leader, you want your people to grow, and you want them to know it on the front end. If they know you will hold them accountable for growth, the chances of it happening increase dramatically. One of the greatest mistakes leaders make is sharing expectations, but failing to later include accountability. Show them change is essential. It is impossible to get better without making changes. No one has ever stayed the same while at the same time rising to a higher level. Being willing to change is one of the prices we pay to grow. Good leaders help people recognize and accept that price. You can't make the changes for them, but you can show them what needs changing, assist them, and encourage them. Keep the connection constant. When it comes to expectations, leaders can never think, set it and forget it. People rarely lead themselves forward or correct themselves when they get off track. People want to be empowered, but often what they need most is accountability. Keeping your connection constant and gently nudging them forward provides both encouragement and consistent accountability. Ask, "Will you help me help you?" When you ask people if they will help you to help them, you are able to measure their level of participation and commitment. By getting them to declare the ways that they want help to grow and change, you obtain their full buy-in. And if they don't follow through, you can hold them accountable for what they declared they would do. 3. Demonstrate transparency before challenging people. One of the most valuable things you can do to increase your leadership capacity is to be authentic and transparent with people, and to share your story, especially before you challenge them to attempt something difficult. Too many leaders think they have to project a perfect image to have leadership credibility. They think they always have to put their best foot forward. What they don't understand is that their best foot is a flawed foot. They miss the power of their own stories of imperfection. A leader's story of struggle, growth, and improvement can inspire people and change lives. People respect leaders who tell the truth but who still hold fast to the vision and keep leading the team forward. 4. Put others ahead of yourself. In the beginning of my career, my leadership was all about me. All I did was wonder, does this person want to hear my vision? Does she want to help my team? Does he want to help me? What can this person do for me? That changed when my attention began to focus on equipping and empowering others. I want to encourage you to make that same shift from me to we, if you haven't made it already. Why? I believe these three factors will make you want to change. Reality. As the challenge escalates, the need for teamwork elevates. Every worthwhile dream is greater than the individual who initially holds it. When we recognize that truth, it motivates us to ask others for help. But we also need to realize that people are most likely to help us after we have helped them in some way. When we equip and empower our team, everyone is able to work together to achieve even the largest dream. Maturity. With one tiny exception, the world is composed of others. I define maturity as unselfishness. It's being able to see things from other people's perspective because you value them. It means building ladders so that others can climb, not fighting to climb the ladder yourself. Effective leadership can never be all about you, because you're not the only one on your team. Profitability. Measure your success by what you give, not what you gain. No matter what you do professionally, you should judge your success by how much you are able to help others. In the end, life is about people. Never forget it. Take care of your people instead of taking care of your career. If you are willing to make success about giving rather than gaining, you will find your life to be greatly rewarding. I know I do. And the people I invest in remind me of why I keep doing it. I want to ask you a question. What do you want your life to stand for? As you grow old and draw near to the end of your life, what kind of impact do you want to have made on the world? I hope you'll choose to add value to people. And I hope you'll choose to become a leader of higher capacity. The more influence you develop, the greater the positive impact you'll be able to make. Leadership potential questions. 1. How much time and effort do you spend on increasing your leadership capacity? What kind of priority has that been for you up until now? If you're willing to make it a higher priority, what will you do to increase it? 2. How well do you connect with people and challenge them? Are you better at one than the other? How can you improve the one you don't do as well? 3. What changes should you make?